Afghan President Ashraf Ghani urges government forces to maintain Kabul law and order as the Taliban reach the capital. Afghanistan's interior minister says his country will have a peaceful transfer of power. And Russia says it is working with other countries to hold an emergency UN security meeting on Afghanistan. Appreciate you being with us. Well, of course, the top story is Afghanistan this hour, where the Taliban are racing closer to a complete military takeover of the country as they reach the capital, Kabul. Militants have surrounded the city, but they say that no attack will be conducted as handover talks are underway. The Taliban say they expect a peaceful transition of power in the next few days. The Afghan acting interior minister has also said that there would be a peaceful transfer of power to a transitional government.
The security of the city has been guaranteed. There will be no attack on the city. The big city and the power will be handed over to a temporary third party, and it is our duty to secure the city.
Afghan President Ashraf Ghani has also called on government forces to maintain law and order in Kabul. The Taliban reached the capital on Sunday after they took other major cities and provincial capitals in the course of a week. Jalalabad and Mazar-e-Sharif are the latest key cities to fall to the militants. Well, Russia says it is working with other members to hold an emergency UN Security Council meeting on Afghanistan as the Taliban are about to take the capital of the war-torn country. Russian foreign ministry official also said Moscow is not planning to evacuate its embassy in the Afghan capital. He said the Taliban have assured Russia and other countries of security and safety of their diplomatic missions and staff in Afghanistan. The U.S. and other countries, meanwhile, rushed to evacuate their citizens and diplomats from Kabul as the militants stood on the outskirts of the city on Sunday. The U.K. also said it is helping its citizens in Afghanistan to return home. Meanwhile, Pakistan has closed the Torkham crossing with neighboring Afghanistan. It came a day after militants captured the areas across the border from Pakistan. Political commentator Jason Unruhy says Western countries, particularly the United States, are fleeing Afghanistan because they have never been welcomed by the Taliban.
The Taliban is sweeping in and is going to take power, and I don't think they're going to take too kindly to the countries that were occupying their country. I think they're fleeing because they know they're probably going to get hurt. You know, after 20 years of prolonged murder of the entire country with, a 1.5 million lives lost, that they're not going to be very happy about what has been going on, and they're probably going to essentially get rid of the Western foreign influence, mainly by I wouldn't put it past them to burn down the embassies or something like that, but I think the message from the Taliban is very clear that the Western powers, particularly the United States, are not welcome anymore. And I think the United States realizes that, as well as the other Western countries, and they're trying to get everything out of there. I mean, embassies often carry very sensitive documents. They're going to want to get rid of those, get them out of the country as quickly as possible before the Taliban comes into power.
Moving on to other news this hour, Palestinians have held a rally in the Gaza Strip to mark the 20th anniversary of the martyrdom of Abu Ali Mustafa, leader of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. Rupert Shapit brings us more.
Palestinians took part in a rally in the Gaza Strip marking the 20th anniversary of the killing of Abu Ali Mustafa, the leader of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. Abu Ali Mustafa was assassinated in an Israeli attack in Ramallah in 2001. Palestinians said they participated in this rally to renew their support for the Palestinian resistance expressing they will continue the road of resistance in defending their rights.
Today, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine is marking the 20th anniversary of the assassination of our leader, Abu Ali Mustafa. By holding this huge rally titled With Knowledge and Resistance, we will build the next generation of freedom and victory. We view the resistance as the only way out of the current crisis. We have many allies from Iran to Syria, Lebanon and Al-Quds, which stand against the Israeli regime.
This rally comes in conjunction with the Resistance Front warning it won't tolerate any more Israel's reluctance to meet Palestinians' demands, especially those related to ending the suffocating siege imposed on the Gaza Strip.
Today, all Palestinian resistance factions are marking Abu Ali Mustafa assassination, vowing to follow in the footsteps of their leaders. Today, Palestinians are involved in a continuous struggle against Israel, especially in Al-Quds, defending their lands. We call for a unified stance in fight against the occupation.
Organizers said this event marks the ongoing resistance until the main goals of all Palestinians are achieved. Resistance factions renewed their pledge to defend the Palestinian people and sent a new warning to the Israeli regime that the coming generations are the generations of liberation.
We believe that generations after generations will keep resisting against Israeli occupation. The Israeli regime should be held accountable for its crimes, and the international community should break its silence towards them.
Palestinians here stress on not only support their resistance and follow the steps of their leaders, but also defend their rights with all means until liberating all Palestine. Ruba Shabit, Gaza.
At least 28 people have been killed in northern Lebanon after a fuel tanker exploded, burning a crowd of people clamoring for gasoline in the crisis-hit country. Lebanon's Red Cross said the explosion in the northern region of Akkar also injured 79 people. The health ministry said some of the victims will need treatment abroad due to the severity of their burns. The tragedy took place early on Sunday as army personnel were handing out fuel from the container which had been confiscated from hoarders. A security source said a brawl erupted among the people jostling for fuel, leading to gunfire that hit the tank. Now, the incident heaps pressure on hospitals, which have already been crippled by fuel shortages and long power cuts. South Korea and the United States will begin their annual joint war games on Monday, despite warnings from North Korea. Well, the exercises follow last week's preliminary drills and will reportedly continue for 9 days. A day after the move, North Korea stopped answering the South on the newly reactivated hotline between the two sides. Pyongyang also said the U.S. and South Korea will face more serious security threats by ignoring its repeated warnings against holding war games. North Korea considers Seoul and Washington's regular exercises on the Korean Peninsula as rehearsals for war. It says they threaten North Korean people and raise tensions in the region. And now to France, where demonstrators have taken to the streets of Paris for the seventh consecutive weekend to protest against the COVID health pass as well as mandatory vaccinations. To enjoy usually routine activities, French citizens now have to be vaccinated against COVID-19, be in possession of a negative test, or have recently recovered from the virus. The health pass came into effect last month in France amid a new surge in infections. COVID-19 has infected more than 6 million people in the country and claimed the lives of nearly 112,000 others. Now to coronavirus news, where the coronavirus pandemic continues to take its toll on India as the country is struggling to contain the deadly virus. Health officials reported well over 36,000 new daily infections during the past 24 hours, bringing that total caseload to more than 32 million. Daily deaths also rose by 493 to over 430,000. India began the vaccination drive in January this year. Nearly 530 million of the country's 1.3 billion population have received at least one dose of the vaccine. Now, the spike in recent cases is largely due to the more contagious Delta variant of COVID-19 that was first detected in India itself. And we have more breaking news dealing with Afghanistan there. The Swedish foreign minister there has said that all Swedish embassy personnel to leave Kabul immediately. And we know that the Western embassies are trying to evacuate their personnel from Afghanistan, whereas Eastern countries basically are staying put and saying that they have been guaranteed safety by the Taliban. Of course, we're continuing to cover that very, very fluid situation that is taking place in Afghanistan. Meanwhile, Iran has registered its highest daily deaths from COVID-19 since the pandemic began. The health ministry said 620 patients lost their lives to the virus during the past 24 hours. That brings Iran's COVID death toll to nearly 98,000 out of more than 4.4 million total infections. The country has been grappling with a fifth wave of the disease triggered by the Delta variant for nearly 2 months now. Iran has announced new curbs to combat the spread of the disease. A ban on car travel between provinces came into effect on Sunday and will be in place until August 27th. Government offices, banks, and non-essential businesses will also be closed countrywide from Monday until next Saturday. Al-Sudan's government has decided to hand over ousted President Omar al-Bashir to the International Criminal Court over the Darfur conflict. Bashir is accused of genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity in the Sudanese region. Mohammed Ali Fazari has more in this report.
Sudan has officially agreed to hand over ousted President Omar al-Bashir to the International Criminal Court, along with other officials wanted over the Darfur conflict. The International Criminal Court Chief Prosecutor held talks with Sudanese officials in accelerating practical steps to hand over those wanted by the court over alleged atrocities committed in Darfur.
I'm pleased to announce that the reason I was late was I was signing a memorandum of understanding with the government of Sudan that was signed by me as the prosecutor and by the Minister of Justice.
Al-Bashir is currently in Khobar prison in the Sudanese capital. He was dismissed and arrested in April 2019 following a massive popular protest movement against him. ICC Chief Prosecution Karim Khan said he will accomplish his mission in order to meet the expectations of the international community, especially with regard to Security Council resolutions to achieve justice about the victims of Darfur. Last week, the Sudanese cabinet approved Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court in what was considered as a new step towards trying al-Bashir before this international judicial body in The Hague.
The ratification of cabinet to Rome Statute, which took place a few days ago, represents a significant step by the government to fulfill its international commitment to ratify all conventions and charters. Furthermore, the Juba peace agreement signed between the transitional government and Darfur armed movements stipulates clearly that wanted persons must face justice in the ICC.
In 2009, the International Criminal Court issued an arrest warrant for al-Bashir, accusing him of committing war crimes and crimes against humanity during the armed conflicts in Darfur that erupted in 2003 and killed more than 300,000 people.
The Sudanese government decision to ratify the Rome Statute will make the government closer to international justice. But as observers say, it also divides the political parties in the country for and against. Muhammad Ali Fazari, Khartoum.
Well, a mass shooting in the United Kingdom's southwestern city of Plymouth has left several people dead, among them a three-year-old girl. The violent attack is the first of its kind in the country in over 10 years and has raised questions about whether it could have been prevented. Saidpour Reza brings us more in this report.
What started as a quiet day for the residents of Keyham in Plymouth, southwest England, ended with a tragedy. A mass shooting by a white male who took six lives, including his own. The mood here, one of absolute shock and horror.
Sad as well, obviously, all the people that have lost their lives, the people that are injured, the people that are affected by it. It's just sickening.
It's completely wrong to kill innocent people and your own family. It's not fair. It's not acceptable. The guy needed help, evidently. He probably wasn't given the help he needed.
I mean, it is very scary, like, you just don't want to go out, do you? You want to stay inside and be safe.
Jake Davidson, a 23-year-old apprentice crane operator, was a licensed gun owner who launched a lone wolf attack using a pump-action shotgun, according to witnesses.
It all started with the gunman shooting a woman in one of the houses and ended with him taking his own life. Six lives lost in nearly 6 minutes.
Police said his motive was still unknown.
There is no motive as we know at present. Again, that will be subject to inquiry, but we are at the moment not considering terrorism or a relationship with any far-right group or any such other group.
But Davidson's social media accounts offer a window into his state of mind. A case in point, a video post on YouTube where he considers himself as the Terminator.
The whole premise of the Terminator movies is that, you know, everything's rigged against you. There's no hope for humanity. You know, we're on the brink of extinction.
He was also believed to have been a member of Incel, a notorious online community of celibate men with misogynistic views. Police have called the incident not terror-related, raising questions about whether the police would give the same designation if the gunman were someone from a minority group. The UK has stringent gun ownership laws. The last time such an incident happened was in 2010. Perpetrated by a taxi driver who killed 18 people and injured several more. It's almost clear Davidson was radicalized online, which begs the question whether the authorities could have done more to prevent the horrifying killing spree. Saeed Puriza, Plymouth.
And with that brings us to the end of this World News Bulletin. Thank you all so much for staying with us.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Listeners special. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this Sunday, August 15th, 2021. I'm Atef Erfani, hosting this program today. As you may know, Listeners Special is a Sunday program where your views are presented through emails and letters. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcasts. If you have any messages for our dear listeners around the world, then record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Please do remember, Listeners Special, the Sunday program, is your program. It's your views that are important. Please keep us company until the end of the program. Dear listeners, this is Listeners Special, and as you may know, we are in the month of Muharram, and these days we are commemorating the tragic martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, and his companions. And in a couple of days, we will commemorate the anniversary of the tragic events of Tasua and Ashura. So here I do express my condolences on these tragic events. Dear listeners, please stay with us. Welcome back. As usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very important and useful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports, as you may know, actually enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an EQSL card from IRIB English Radio. So here I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including a reception report from Muhammad Fadli, one of our regular listeners from Malaysia. Aziz Hernando from Spain has sent us a reception report, as well as Ivan A. Zeleny, one of our regular listeners from Russia. Muhammad, Aziz, and Ivan, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. Also, we have received, as usual, many emails and letters from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during the program, I will read their emails or letters. First of all, we have an email from Finland. This email is from Sami Niemelainen. I wish I'm right in pronouncing his name. He's or her name, actually, because I don't know Finnish. Anyway, thank you, Sami. And from Pakistan, we have an email from Abed Hossein Sajed, one of our regular listeners. From Netherlands, we have an email from Han Hardong. And also from the United States, we have an email from Muhammad Khaku. Well, dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with these emails and letters. Please stay tuned. Welcome back. As I said, we have received an email from Abed Hossein Sajed from Pakistan. Abed Hossein Sajed is one of our regular listeners who says, "Dear IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. After a long time, I listened to your program. We are in the month of Muharram, that is the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hossein, peace upon him. I hope we can listen to great information and programs on that occasion from your radio. Please send me QSL card. I shall wait for it." First of all, salam and warmest greetings to you, Abed Hossein Sajed from Pakistan, and many thanks for writing this email to IRIB English Radio and to listeners special. Of course, as you said, we are in the month of Muharram, and IRIB English Radio broadcasts different programs on this month, the month of Muharram, and the tragic events of actually the martyrdom of Imam Hussein and his companions. Right now, we are broadcasting this series, Muharram Special, from IRIB English Radio, and we hope you listen to this program and enjoy it, of course. Abed Hossein Sajed from Pakistan, my colleagues will send you an EQSL card. Many thanks for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. Write to us soon. We wish you all the best. From Finland, we have received an email from Sami Niemelainen. As I said, I wish I'm right in pronouncing your name, Sami. Sami says, "Dear IRIB English Radio, I had a pleasure to listen to your radio station in east part of Finland in city called Joensuu. The signal quality is good at 1740 Finland's local time. It's very nice to receive signal from your radio station here in Finland. I have made short audio recording especially for you so you can hear easily the quality of the signal and confirm if it's your station. Salam and warmest greetings to you, Sami from Finland. Many thanks for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. It seems that you're a new listener of IRIB English Radio, and we are so happy that you were successful in receiving the signals of IRIB English Radio in your region, as you said, in your city called Joensuu, I wish I'm right. As you said, the signal quality was good, and of course, reflecting these positive vibes, you know, sending positive vibes from our listeners is great and makes us more determined and resolved in our job and in our path in producing programs. So you received IRIB English Radio in your region and in your city, and the signal was good. Thank God. Of course, we have received your short audio recording, and my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. Sami from Finland, many thanks for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. Write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon, and we are waiting for your actually views and outlooks about our programs. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters from around the world. Welcome back. Here we have an email from the U.S. This email is from Muhammad Haku, who is one of our regular listeners, who says, once again, the month of Muharram has arrived, and many Muslims, especially Shia Muslims, all around the world are dressed in black. The mosques will be decorated in black wall coverings with flags and replica shrines. Also, Muhammad Haku has... in a part of his email has actually described the ceremonies of mourning ceremonies of Muharram. And in a part of his email, he says Muharram is the month of epic heroism and self-sacrifice, the month in which truth condemned falsehood and branded the mark of disgrace upon the forehead of all oppressors and the oppressed. The tragedy of Karbala has been commemorated for over 1,400 years with the same fervor year after year, and the message of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, on the day of Ashura is relevant for all times. People in all corners of the globe are finally rising up to the injustices being committed against them. It is from Imam Hussein, peace upon him, they can learn how a small cadre of people dedicated to truth, peace, and justice can undertake a successful struggle against tyrannical regimes with wide-reaching control. As the poets say, when humanity wakes up from its slumber, every nation will cry out, Hussein is ours. Salam and warmest greetings to you, Muhammad Haku from the U.S., and many thanks for writing this email about the month of Muharram and the epic of Ashura and the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, and his companions. This was a great email, and you discussed different ceremonies, the mourning ceremonies of Imam Hussein, and as you said, the tragedy of Karbala is still alive around the world and around the globe for all peoples not only Muslims, but also all freedom seekers around the world. Yes, as you said, when humanity wakes up from its slumber, every nation will cry out, Hussein is ours. Because Imam Hussein actually was after the truth, so his message is for all of the humanity and is still alive. Many thanks for writing this email to us, Muhammad Haku from the U.S. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRB English radio programs. And the last but not the least is an email from the Netherlands. This email is from Han Hardong. Han from the Netherlands says, hello, I'm listening to your very pleasing mailbag program today, and I have to say that the reception is very good. I will try to listen to your program more often, and thank you for your informative programs. With kind regards. Warmest greetings to you, Han Hardong from the Netherlands. It seems that you've recently joined IRB English Radio. Many thanks for writing this email to us. It's really good to receive positive vibes like the one you did. As you said, you found IRB English radio programs very informative, and you found, of course, the signal good. Han Hardong from the Netherlands, write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. So we wish you all the best. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with you. Here we've reached the section of this week's interview, which is conducted with one of our regular listeners. Please take a listen.
Well, I'm Anjum Hussein. I hail from Pahalgam town of the Kashmir region. Kashmir is a region neighboring India and Pakistan. The region has its own indigenous and distinct identity in terms of its culture, language, and literature. With regard to Muharram, I'll briefly tell you about how people mark the Muharram in Kashmir. It's also symbolized by a distinct way of holding morning gatherings called majalis, and processions are taken out especially from 1st to the 10th of the month. The region is mainly Sunni Muslim dominated, with Shia Muslims scattered all over Kashmir Valley. In the summer capital, for example, the summer capital city, there are some Shia majority pockets such as Hasanabad and Zaribal. Districts like Anantnag and Pulwama, Kulgam, Baramulla, Sopor, and Badgam also have many villages scattered here and there with Shia Muslims residing in these villages. Muharram is observed with great religious fervor and enthusiasm. Kashmir has a distinct marsia, that is the eulogizing of the Karbala martyrs, the marsia culture and literature. Mourners sit in many concentric circles in the majalis, and the marsia reciter keeps moving around and reciting, and all the people take part in the recitation of these marasi, these eulogizations. Banners are hung in the streets, marketplaces, and crossings and highways. And these banners contain poetry, quotes, and sayings related to Imam Hussein alayhi salam and Islam and the Prophet of Islam sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Soon after the Eids of Ghadir and Mubala are celebrated, the Husseiniyas, locally called as Imambaras, are draped in black cloth to symbolize the mourning culture. On the day of Ashura, processions are taken out at various places in the Kashmir region. Youth try to promote and propagate the mission and the vision, the values for which Imam Hussein alayhi salam stood for, and the sacrifices that were made by him and his pious companions by publishing and distributing his message through pamphlets and booklets. Marcia, elegies and Noha, Latmia are recited in morning gatherings and processions in the Kashmiri language and the Urdu language, though Urdu is a subcontinental language and not the mother tongue of the majority of people in this region. And sometimes people also recite Persian Marcia also. And Sunni Muslim brothers and sisters, they also, it's very pertinent to mention, there has been very great show of unity by the Muslims in the region. The Sunni Muslims, they also take part in these mourning gatherings and processions. They too could be seen distributing drinking water to commemorate the thirst of the Karbala warriors. At some places, the mourning continues till the 40th day of Ashura, also referred locally as Arba'in. Some historic processions have been banned by the government for a couple of decades now, citing the law and order problems, since Kashmir is a disputed region between India and Pakistan. Every year you try to defy the ban and raise Ashura slogans of resistance, and oftentimes they face police action and imprisonment. So overall, we have a very great Muharram culture, Karbala culture in Kashmir, and people spend a lot of money, time, and energy and resources to hold these gatherings, to mark these gatherings, to mark religious and mourning ceremonies commemorating the martyrdom of the Karbala martyrs. So that was a brief account of how Muharram is celebrated in Kashmir. Thank you so much.
Again, I do express my condolences on the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, and his companions. Dear listeners, please don't forget to keep in touch with IRIB English Radio. Have a good time. Dear listeners, before ending this week's edition of Listeners Special, again, I do express my deepest condolences on the tragic martyrdom anniversary of Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace be upon him, the fifth infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him, and his progeny. Please keep in touch with IRIB English Radio and have a good time.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Limelight.
Following last summer's historic protest against U.S. police violence, Atlanta responded by striking down any police reform measures and limiting opportunities for public comment while increasing the police budget and upping citizen surveillance. Atlanta police have killed at least 3 people since the demonstrations, most recently in late July, while the long battle to close the city jail appears to have reached another stalemate. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Aja Arnold, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Atlanta Poised to Approve Massive Police Training Facility Despite Public Opposition. Stay tuned, please, for the details of this article. On a recent evening in Atlanta, a group of over 100 residents gathered in the sanctuary of a local church, spaced out and wearing masks to follow pandemic precautions. "We're dealing with a very important issue tonight that the city has not dealt with," said Kamu Franklin of Community Movement Builders, a local black-led collective that organizes against gentrification in the city, kicking off a town hall as the setting sun peered in through large pastel stained glass windows. "What we have here is a city dedicated to protecting the police while pushing out poor working class residents, particularly black poor working class residents, under the guise it's helping to protect the people," unquote. For the next 2 hours, residents and activists took turns commenting on the city's latest development plans that have caused a stir among locals. A $90 million police training facility in the city's large remaining green space known as the Old Atlanta Prison Farm. On June 7th, City Council member Joyce Shepherd introduced legislation that would authorize a ground lease to the Atlanta Police Foundation for the full 381 acres. That ordinance is moving through City Council committees and is expected to come up for a vote by the full council August 16th. So far, only 2 members of the 16-person council, Antonio Brown and Carla Smith, have publicly said they would vote against approving the project. In the lead-up to the vote, some Atlanta residents have raised concerns about the proposed training center, which activists have dubbed COP City since AFP plans to build a mock city for the first responders to train in. Top of mind to the Stop COP City coalition are the potential environmental and public health impacts of building the training center. Along with investing so much money in the police amid the city police brutality issues and housing crisis. Following last summer's historic protest against police violence, the city responded by striking down any police reform measures and limiting opportunities for public comment while increasing the police budget and upping citizen surveillance. Atlanta police have killed at least 3 people since the demonstrations, most recently in late July, while the long battle to close the city jail appears to have reached another stalemate. In total, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation has been called to investigate 59 officer-involved shootings throughout the state this year. They launched 96 investigations in 2020. The People's Town Hall, which was organized by the Atlanta Democratic Socialists of America and was attended by 2 city council members, came after the city and AFP hosted 2 virtual public input sessions in which police representatives presented a slideshow and responded to questions that had been submitted ahead of time. Residents weren't given any time to speak, and the chat function was disabled, so some people held up written messages to their screens instead. Community members did not have a say whatsoever in the creation of the plans or in the selection of the site. Brad Beadles, a resident of DeKalb County, where the proposed facility will be located, told The Intercept in an email. AFP, he added, saw no need for public input despite the fact that the police deal with the public each and every day as part of their job. When private corporate donors are able to fund militarized training facilities for the police, they are essentially buying off the police. They are making it clear who the police work for. The Atlanta Police Foundation is a nonprofit organization that claims to have united the business and philanthropic community with the Atlanta Police Department. It is backed by an array of corporate donors, including Delta, UPS, and Cox Enterprises, which owns the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. The foundation has proposed funding the training center through a public-private partnership that will leave taxpayers to pay an estimated $30 million, one-third of the estimated cost. Shepherd's Ordinance seeks to lease the land to APF for $10 a year for up to 50 years. The renderings of the facility include plans to burn towers, install new firing ranges, launch explosives, and a cop academy APF calls the Institute of Social Justice. It will be much larger than facilities used by police departments in other major cities. New York City's police department, for example, uses a 32-acre training facility in Queens, while the Los Angeles Police Department's facility sits on 21 acres. The NYPD and LAPD are 2 of the top 3 largest police departments in the country, while Atlanta's ranks 19th. APF CEO and President Dave Wilkinson has repeatedly touted to council members that 95% of Atlantans overwhelmingly approve this project, but has not produced any evidence for this statistic. Neither Wilkinson nor the APF Communications Office responded to requests for comment. City Council President Felicia Moore told Intercept that she had passed questions about public support and other concerns on APF and had not yet received a response. Other council members either denied comment or did not respond to the intercept inquiries. Wilkinson has been dismissive of residents' concerns. In an email to a city council member who had passed along questions from a resident about the deal's unpopularity among constituents and environmental concerns, Wilkinson accused activists of spreading misinformation to delay the vote. However, a delay in the vote could be catastrophic as the funding could be withdrawn, he wrote. Every CM that I have briefed on this project has committed their support and committed their vote for the project. Therefore, this should be voted through with no problem, he added. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent, and FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with
Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته dear listeners welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. In this month of Muharram, you know, one of the great acts is the crying of Imam al-Husayn alayhi wasalam. Another one is the visitation of Imam al-Husayn alayhi wasalam, the ziyarah. And how, you know, privileged are those who are able to go to the land of Karbala and visit the shrine and the mausoleum of Imam al-Husayn alayhi wasalam in, you know, close proximity. But just because we are not able to go to Karbala, just because we are not able to see the beautiful dome or the domes while standing in the middle of Bainul Haramain, it does not mean that we are deprived of the ziyarah of Imam al-Husayn alayhi wasalam. No, we can do the ziyarah from afar. And maybe, hopefully, inshallah, Allah accepts the ziyarah from us and accepts it, you know, even greater than He would than if we were close, because of the purity of our intentions and the sincerity of our hearts. In this tradition, we see that it's quite an interesting tradition, again from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, who is asked by a person by the name of Riba'iba Abdullah. Now, it is possible that this person was from Iraq, by the wording of the tradition. For the narrator says, I asked Imam Sadiq alayhi salam in Medina, where are the graves of the martyrs of Uhud? To this the Imam alayhi salam replied, is not the best of the martyrs, that is referring to Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, buried near you? So from this we can understand that the questioner is probably somebody who was coming from Iraq. And it may have been the time for Umrah or Hajj that he met the Imam alayhi salam in Medina. Again, this is a possibility. So the Imam then answers him thus, and he says, I swear to He who has my life in His hand that there are 4,000 angels around the grave of Hussein alayhi salam, who are disheveled, who are uneasy, who are, you know, cannot be calmed. They are covered with dust and who cry over him, and will continue to do so until the day of judgment. That these angels see the beauty, they see the effect that the tears for Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam can have. Or rather, they see the pleasure of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in this act. Now, that's a very different level, that's a very high level, where you see the pleasure of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in this. That lamenting Abu Abdullah al-Husayn alayhi salam together with the pleasure of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to make us of those who truly lament Abu Abdullah al-Husayn alayhi salam, and to grant us the ability to go for the ziyarah of Abu Abdullah al-Husayn alayhi salam. Insha'Allah, until our next episode, assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more.